point out that one of our other new babies is here. Baby Owen is here with Mom, Adrian, and Scott Walkenberg. Would you stand? How old is Owen? 2 weeks? 2 weeks. We're so glad you're here. You got to start them attending church right away. I'm not kidding. We are lifting up the importance of supporting women's rights and reproductive justice. Now, you might think this sounds like two topics, but in today's context, they are so intricately connected that our congregation is treating them together. Within this conversation today, I will focus my remarks on the essential role of leadership, many kinds of leadership, for promoting women's rights and reproductive justice. Thankfully, our Unitarian Universalist faith tradition draws upon outside sources for inspiration, and we really open up to that. This month, many of us are enjoying the athletic leadership of women in the Olympics. Women athletes from all over the world. We know NBC has their coverage thing where they do just mostly the Americans, but women from all over the world, but it does include impressive skills and power from the U.S. women's beach volleyball. The gymnasts and the soccer team for the women in the U.S. have been amazing. Women athletes from all over the world truly serve as great role models for developing healthy self-esteem, setting goals, going at it, working yourself and with others to achieve your dreams. And what is probably a more important international story, however, involving female leadership, at least this one is very critical as well. This month, in the battle against AIDS, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton traveled to Malawi and Uganda. About 23 million people in sub-Saharan Africa are believed infected with AIDS, and the United Nations has estimated that the region had 1.2 million AIDS-related deaths in 2010. Malawi is a more promising example where people are getting resources and improving cultural habits. Unfortunately, Uganda is the one sub-Saharan country where AIDS rates are on the rise. So over the decades, we can be proud that Secretary Clinton has built relationships of tremendous trust and respect with many key African leaders. And now she is cashing in on her sweat equity in efforts to save lives. And I imagine that many African women are able to hear her a little bit more as a female. And Mrs. Clinton has an opportunity to give a little more direction and encouragement as a part of the communities working to solve this crisis. Another example of superb female leadership comes from the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. This is the group representing approximately 80% of the 57,000 Catholic nuns in America. The American nuns are under fire from the Vatican. The Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith says that the nuns are undermining Roman Catholic teachings on homosexuality and birth control, and that they are promoting radical feminist themes incompatible with the Catholic faith. They will be invited to our pulpit to share, and I know we're going to give them. These sisters are dynamite. And since the Vatican has started pressing on the nuns, they have demonstrated grace and courage. If you listen to Sister Pat Farrell, who's the president of the LCWR, it does not take long to understand that this woman has tremendous spirituality, strength, kindness, and wisdom. And so... I think the Catholic Church is losing out. I think she would be better than 95% of the American priests That is nothing of a negative statement about any of the male priests. This woman reminds me of Kofi Annan when she speaks, if you know how, if you've heard the past Secretary General of the UN. By their prophetic example, in a very difficult climate, the American nuns are helping people to learn and discern and advocate for justice. The response has been overwhelming. Hundreds and thousands of people have showed their support for the nuns. And so what I am saying to us this morning is, let's follow the nuns. Let's follow our conscience and do what we feel called to do to make the world a better place and to fight injustice, even when it's uncomfortable or might put our privilege at risk. Believe me, these nuns could have just said, that's fine, we'll walk the line. They are lower on the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, but they have plenty of comforts and privileges that they are putting at risk every day. Make no doubt about it. In this type of work, we Unitarian Universalists have a lot to build upon. We have, through the ages, experienced women standing up in leadership in ways that were not expected or allowed. And this has grown and ensured women's rights in our congregations and in the country and in the world. We, the gathered community of folks today, follow in the footsteps of Unitarian giants like Margaret Fuller, the great transcendentalist philosopher who worked hand in hand with Emerson. We follow in the footsteps of Julia Ward Howe, founder of International Mother's Day for Peace. We walk in the footsteps of Susan B. Anthony and Katie Stanton, two of the greatest suffragettes in the history of the nation. Like today's Catholic nuns, Fuller, Howe, Stanton, and Anthony, and countless other women have stepped up, overcome obstacles, and made a difference. Here in our faith movement, we have benefited so many times over the centuries when women have articulated issues that matter deeply to them. They've fought through roadblocks and fear, taken the high road. Countless UU women have created opportunities for everybody to study and figure out what they think and articulate it in a safe, respectful environment, and done their own study and reflection and strongly articulated what they believed, even when it put themselves at risk. Many of us who've been UUs for a long time or for our entire lives feel fortunate that we have experienced so many examples like this in our congregations. In my home church in Chicago, Hazel Hansen was like a grandmother to me. One of her best stories was that Hazel and Eleanor Roosevelt were together working in the League of Women Voters at a time when they were supporting the establishment of the United Nations. And when the UN was being birthed, they went to New York as part of the League of Women Voters and were a part of a week long of celebrations. One night, Hazel and Eleanor were together in drinking wine, celebrating the establishment of the UN, and sitting with their feet dangling in a hotel bathtub, just chatting. And I thought this was like a natural story of what women church leaders did growing up. What you also need to know is that Hazel was the key leader in my hometown, Oak Park, Illinois, contiguous suburb of Chicago. Hazel was the key leader in passing the Fair Housing Law, which passed in Oak Park in 1968 before the federal law was passed. And because of her leadership, Hazel and her husband Hank lived under the threat of violence in their home for over a decade, received death threats on a regular basis. And that's the kind of courage that I also came to think of as natural female leadership in a church. I'm blessed. Here at this congregation, we're blessed to have a history of folks women working on women's studies and empowerment. Reverend Nina Gray and Stephanie Nichols were dedicated and effective. Reverend Marguerite Lovett worked with lay leaders many of whom are here, to create conferences. One was called Choices for Wellness, Empowering Women Toward Better Health. And this is with five outside big-time speakers coming. This was a big conference that folks came from all over the region. Another was called Redefining Myself as Woman. They had workshops on career advancement, being assertive, and redefining yourself after a crisis. Mary Lou Eberly worked for decades on voters' rights. June Krebs has worked for decades on women's international peace and freedom. Right there. Decades. Natural part of female leadership in a church. Here. In our church, women often serve as president of the board and leaders of the most important committees and councils. In my 10 years at USG, 7 of those years, women have been president of the board, the top volunteer spot of 310 members. In our UU movement, over 50% of our ordained ministers are women, and we see the benefits of that all the time in our faith movement, all the time, if we're paying attention. So here's what I've come to reflect on more recently. I think that these excellent experiences with female leaders in our churches have allowed me and others to forget that it's not always like that in the outside world. Not always like that. The reality is that most other religious traditions in America and the world are still predominantly led by men and in many ways oppressive to women. Women still have glass ceilings in our state legislature and corporate and other boardrooms. The Philadelphia Inquirer reports that women represent only 10% of the executive board seats in Philadelphia, even though women account for 53% of the city's residents. In Pennsylvania, a woman working full-time averages about $35,000 a year, while a man working full-time averages about $47,000 a year. At the federal level, which you see throughout our city and state, since the Equal Pay Act has been passed in 1963, the wage gap has been closing between men and women, but it's been closing at an excruciatingly slow rate. And if the trajectories stay the same, women would not be paid the same as men in the United States until the year 2058. 2058 is when today's high school students will be preparing for retirement. And that is too long to wait. So we obviously have a lot of work to do in that area. Yes, Unitarian Universalism is a place where we have known the growing benefits of having women as leaders for decades, and we're sharing that good news with the world. And what we know from our experience, what I know from my experience, and I'm going to say it, is in many areas of society, if women were more involved in decision-making, major decisions would be made better. Okay? Now, I am keenly aware that that sentiment can be made in a way that is anti-male. But I'm not anti-male at all, believe me. Come talk to me. I'm pro-guy. But I'm just saying that this is realistic, pragmatic reality. I believe that if more female state legislators in Pennsylvania were in the budget debates, we would not have just cut tens of thousands of poor people from general assistance. The categories are sickening to your stomach. They include women in battered shelter, just got to shelter, having fled abuse. Some of those women just got cut. Could go right into homeless. I think if there were more women making decisions, we would not have just have a voter ID law, which is disenfranchising hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians, disproportionately high amounts of poor folks, folks of color, and women. Disenfranchised. We as a society need to listen more to women's voices and follow their leadership. The wisdom, we had a town hall meeting for our congregation on March 10th to decide how we're going to focus our energy for social justice ministries. Many people spoke up, mostly women, saying that reproductive rights are under attack in America, they're under attack in Pennsylvania, and it's unacceptable. Many different groups at the national and state levels are working to defund organizations which provide preventative health care services, family planning, and yes, abortion services. Planned Parenthood is under attack. It's very popular within certain groups in America to attack the funding for Planned Parenthood. Well, we need to keep reminding folks that 90% of what Planned Parenthood does in Pennsylvania is give preventative care like pap smears, breast exams, HIV tests. And poor folks thinking about this legislation say, if Planned Parenthood disappears, where do they want me to go to get my breast exam to make sure I don't have cancer in America? So we need to make sure that this, it stays factual debate. However, what I want to say for myself, and I know not everybody agrees with this, but many of us do, in America, safe and legal abortion services are essential for our civil society. They're essential. I've not said that enough from the pulpit over the years, and I apologize for that. Let me tell you one of my stories, because I've realized that I have more than one. One of my dear friends and his girlfriend one time realized they were pregnant, and there was no way they were going to be good parents. And so they had to organize to have her have an abortion in a different state from where we were, and I accompanied them. I am so grateful in my heart and in my soul that we could go and this woman could have safe, kind, effective, legal abortion. That's my story. And I believe, I imagine, that many of us have stories of somebody very close to us or ourselves needing legal and safe abortion. And I believe that we need to work to protect that right. And it's under attack. Sometimes, thinking of the nuns, the group that is not expected to step up or not allowed to show up has to do just that. Well, what I'm saying is people of faith, we need to step up. Because we have a theology of choice and justice, which goes back hundreds of years, and because too many folks think that all religious people are anti-choice. Let's take a risk on issues that matter to us the most, even if it's uncomfortable. Nothing comfortable about this conversation, believe me. And even if it puts our privilege at risk, let's step up. Since the 1960s, the General Assembly of our Unitarian Universalist Association has had resolutions for reproductive justice. A new resolution was just passed in Phoenix. Our own Rob Keithan, past consulting minister, made a clarion call from the floor, getting people to vote for this. I'm really proud of Rob. Listen to the words of author and journalist Anna Quinlan. She talks about how working for women's rights and reproductive justice is a part of a faith movement. She says, "We have faith in the ability of women, rich and poor, from all backgrounds, to make correct and moral decisions about themselves and their families if they are given information, help, and support. We have faith that educating girls and boys will empower women, and that women who are empowered will help to raise strong families with their partners." This is one of the driving principles of our education program for our youth our whole lives. Reproductive sex ed for our teenagers, which is excellent. I offer two basic points and a call to action. I invite you to take action on these two points. First, tell your legislators to stop attacks and restrictions on women's reproductive health care. Stop the attacks on reproductive. Since the November 10th election, 1,200 bills have been introduced to state legislation in states trying to reduce women's access to health care. One specific example that's in play in Pennsylvania could pop to the floor at any time because it's been bounced around in committee is the so-called Women's Right to Know Act, which in my opinion is a demeaning and slightly cruel bill. Requires three things. One, an ultrasound is performed 24 hours before an abortion. Two, the screen is aimed at the woman so she's forced to look away or close her eyes if she does not want to view the image. And three, the woman has to be given a printed photo of the ultrasound. Now, in my opinion, that's an overreach. That interferes with personal, private, medical decisions that should be left to women and families and doctors. So I consider that something we should oppose. The second call to action is tell our legislators to stop any defunding of family planning organizations like Planned Parenthood. 90% of their services are preventative health care. These services are essential for well-being in a civil society. Stop it. Remember, our efforts can make a difference. People fought for decades before 2010 when President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act, which established, among other things, a list of services available to consumers with no copay. So now, this is progress, no copay for gynecological exams, no copays for breast cancer screening, no copays for FDA-approved contraceptions. Good fact to know. Study after study shows that providing safe and effective birth control decreases the abortion rate. Birth control. Good to offer safe, available birth control. My last point this morning is to the men. To the men. The men need to step up and lead as well. And I know, well, sometimes the group that is not expected to step up, the nuns, has to do just that. And I know for years in reproductive justice meetings, there have been some men, Dr. Mark Woodland's back there, our member who's been working on reproductive justice for decades, Aaron Van Gossen has been showing up at our meetings here, but the reality is that for decades at the local and national level, it's been predominantly women leading the way. And that's great, because you've heard what I think about women leadership, but the men need to step up now more as allies. We're the ones who get paid more. We're the ones who society has given more privileges. We're the ones who some people listen to our voice a little bit more. Let's follow the nuns. Let's follow Fuller and Howe and Stanton and Anthony. Let's follow Stephanie, Marguerite, Nina, and Mary Lowe. Let's follow Carla, Debbie, Linda, Marietta, Berdine, Gloria, Betty, Jill, Marina, Patrice, and Betsy. Let's all of us, men and women, people of the human family, let's take our turns in leadership and as followers. Let's all of us take a risk on issues that matter to us most, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it puts our privilege at risk. Blessings be. Amen.